Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, your host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report podcast, and today is April the 23rd, 2024. It has been 3,739 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 63 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 60 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Monday and Tuesday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. There are map updates today. The Russia-Ukraine war report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, operational commands north, south, and east of Ukraine, open-source intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. Here is my daily assessment. 1. In our assessment, the Russian breach of Ukrainian defensive lines in Ocheretene has created a critical situation threatening to collapse the Ukrainian defensive lines in the Avdiivka area of operation, if the 47th Mechanized Infantry Brigade is not immediately reinforced. 2. We maintain that military aid from the United States will arrive within 2 weeks of approval by President Joe Biden and have a material impact on stabilizing Ukrainian defensive lines within 4 to 6 weeks. 3. Ukrainian forces continue to have insufficient ammunition resources, particularly short-range air defense systems, which enable the holding of existing defensive lines and protect the civilian population. 4. The world is caught in the mutually assured destruction and stability paradox with renewed nuclear threats by Kremlin leadership. 5. Russian forces have an operational goal to capture Chasiv Yar by May the 9th, regardless of cost. 6. In our assessment, Russia is setting conditions for a wider attack in the direction of Vuhledar, but we continue to question how much combat potential will be available to expand current operations this summer. And Moscow is under increasing pressure due to the imminent increase in military aid to Ukraine. 7. Russia's trampling of international humanitarian law has been accelerating since March the 22nd. In our assessment, the willful ignoring of blatant Russian war crimes by international watchdogs will continue to encourage escalation. 8. The disjointed response to Russian aggression by Ukraine's allies continues to embolden Moscow, leading to the most serious airspace violation of a NATO country since Russia expanded its war of aggression on February 24, 2022. Inaction by the United States and the excessively risk-averse rules of engagement forced on the NATO alliance are creating an environment ripe for a serious international incident. 9. The attacks on Ukraine's energy infrastructure have incrementally increased the chance of an intentional nuclear accident at multiple nuclear facilities in Ukraine. And the situation is more serious, especially at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. Russia continued its attacks on civilians and civilian infrastructure. During April the 22nd and the morning of April the 23rd, Ukrainian air defenses shot down 15 of 16 Shahed 136 one-way drones. Russia also launched 2 Iskander-M short-range ballistic missiles and at least 1 Kh-59 air-launched guided missile. At the time of recording, there was a report of a strike in Kharkiv Oblast that is consistent with an S-300 anti-aircraft missile used for a ground attack. In the city of Kharkiv, a Kh-59 missile hit the main digital TV transmission tower, collapsing the top half of the structure. There were no injuries, and residents have been advised to listen to radio broadcasts for news. In the village of Yurchankovo, the VKS, that's the Russian Aerospace Forces, bombed an excavator, killing the driver instantly. A humanitarian aid worker was injured in Kupiansk during a separate Russian attack. In the early morning of April the 23rd, a Russian missile strike hit an abandoned chicken farm near Kharkiv. At the time of recording, no other information was available. Most of the Shahed 136 one-way drones launched by Russia targeted Kyiv, with all intercepted without incident. In Odessa, a Shahed 136 hit a residential area, damaging 14 apartment buildings and wounding 7, including 2 children. 34 people required rescue from emergency services. Russian forces continued to shell free Kherson Oblast from the left bank of the Dnipro River. 2 people were wounded in Kherson, including a woman waiting at a bus stop who received a severe closed head injury. 2 men, including an 85-year-old pensioner, were killed in a Russian attack near the remains of the Kakhovka Dam. Moving to the action report, we start in Luhansk Oblast in the Svatove area of Operation Oryo, where Russian forces probed Ukrainian defenses east of Novoyegorivka, suffered losses and retreated to their defensive positions. Fighting continued in the Kremenna AO of Luhansk Oblast. Mutual fighting was reported east of Terny, with no change in the situation. Russian forces attacked in the direction of Torske, but failed to advance. The General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, or GSAFU, reported fighting restarted in the Serebryansky Forest. Our analyst team found evidence of fighting south of the village of Dubrova. In the Siversky of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces entered an operational pause, with only harassment attacks northeast and southeast of Bilohorivka. Russian troops made another attempt to advance on Verkhnyokamensky from Zolotarivka, suffered additional losses and returned to their defensive positions. Moving to the Donbas, in northeastern Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces made another round of attacks in the Siversky of Donetsk Oblast, where fighting continued in the area of Spirne and southeast of Vyimka. In the Kostyantynivka AO, Ukrainian forces have stabilized their defensive lines and continued to push Russian forces back. The Russian Ministry of Defense, or ARMAD, reported fighting in the area of Grigorivka. In our assessment, and based on Ukrainian reports, this was an assault on the Russian flank west of Bogdanivka, where ARMAD also reported fighting continued. The deputy commander of the Achilles Assault Rifle Battalion, 92nd Motor Infantry Brigade, said that Russian troops were attempting to advance on Chasiv Yar from Bogdanivka, frontally from the Khromovo direction and north of Ivanivske. Quote, Chasiv Yar is reliably protected, but the enemy's attempts to capture the city are quite powerful. Russian forces have not been able to advance into Chasiv Yar, and our current map probably overstates their territorial control. The VKS continues to bomb the settlement, making it increasingly uninhabitable for the 700 civilians who refuse to evacuate. South of Chasiv Yar, Ukrainian forces retook the tree line and trenches south of Ivanivske and west of the Duchess and garden plots in southwestern Bakhmut. Because the area east of the recaptured trenches is open fields a kilometer wide, we adjusted the war map, marking that area as a no-man's land to the western edge of the Duchess. It will be challenging for Russian troops to retake the positions if Ukrainian forces can withstand close air support attacks by the VKS. The advance also provided relief to the northern flank of Klishchivka, where positional fighting continued. South of Klishchivka, Russian forces renewed their attacks southeast of Andriivka, with no change in the situation. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces have expanded their control in Ocheretene, threatening to breach Ukrainian defenses and flank the natural defensive barriers west of Avdiivka. Russian propagandist claims of the capture of Novokalinovo are false, with fighting continuing in the village. The Ukrainian 47th Mechanized Brigade has pulled up Bradley infantry fighting vehicles to defend Ocheretene, but has not been able to stabilize the situation. Russian troops continue to advance through the southern part of the settlement, following the railroad line. Russian troops also punched through Ukrainian defenses north of the train station, reaching the center of Ocheretene and raising their flag. They were expanding their area of control in three directions, driving a wedge into Ukrainian defensive lines. There has not been a breach, but the situation has become critical. Moving to assessment. If Russia can capture Ocheretene, its troops can continue to advance on the T-511 highway toward Hrodivka, pushing into the second echelon of Ukrainian defenses where artillery units are located. This would threaten the entire Ukrainian defensive line from Novobakhmutivka to Netailova. In our assessment, the situation is critical, and Ukrainian commanders need to dedicate the resources to push Russian troops out of Ocheretene and back to the eastern edge of Novobakhmutivka. This is one of the most critical defensive situations since the December 18, 2022 capture of Yakovlivka near Soledar. The loss of Yakovlivka set conditions for Russian troops to capture Soledar, leading to the fall of Bakhmut. Along the defensive lines west of Avdiivka, Ukrainian forces continued to hold back Russian troops. Fighting continued east of Novobakhmutivka in Berdychi and east of Semenivka, Umanske, Yasnobrodivka and Netailova. In the Vuhledaryo, fighting continued on the southeast edges of Krasnohorivka, with no change in the situation, and Russian forces continued more intense attacks on the eastern edge of Georgievka and northwest of Pobeda. Russia released a video showing a flag raising on the western edge of Novomikhailivka, and Armod claimed that the settlement had been captured. The commander of the Ukrainian 79th Air Assault Brigade denied the settlement was under Russian control, stating that his troops still held 15-20% of Novomikhailivka and maintain fire control over the occupied areas. Based on the geolocated video, we moved the line of conflict to the eastern edge of Paraskovivka. In our assessment, Ukrainian troops have withdrawn, but Russian troops have not established military control in the western third of the settlement. Russian forces continued their assaults in the Staromlinivka AO, eliminating their own advance east of Urozhaine in a friendly fire incident that destroyed a tank and an MTLB armored personnel carrier. Positional fighting continued west of Staromayorske, with no change in the situation. There was a large fire visible from occupied Mariupol in the left bank area, with local insurgents reporting three trucks brought wounded Russian soldiers to the hospital. Russian occupiers claimed the fire was burning reeds near marshland, but the geography doesn't match. Cloud cover prevented analysis using NASA Fire Information for Resource Management Systems data, preventing us from verifying the reports. A Russian aircraft dropped another Fab 500 bomb in the Belgorod region. The bomb did not arm, and explosive ordnance disposal engineers neutralized the threat. While Russian bombs have fallen off of aircraft along the entire line of conflict, in the last 45 days, over 75% of the incidents have occurred in the Belgorod region. In the Karachay-Cherkess Republic, Islamic extremists, including Ruslan Semyonov, who is already wanted for terrorism, ambushed police with the Ministry of Internal Affairs, killing at least two officers and stealing weapons. In Voronezh, the Enikmash VE plant had a major fire, destroying up to 4,000 square meters of electrical equipment production. Three employees were killed and two more were wounded. We normally don't report on non-combat-related industrial accidents in Ukraine or Russia, but the plant is believed to produce equipment used in war production. In the Smolensk region, three children, ages 13 to 16, were arrested for setting multiple railroad relay cabinets on fire between the Krasnaya and Gusina stations near the Belarus border. The April 17 attack temporarily shut down passenger rail traffic. All three are in custody, with two old enough to be tried as adults for sabotage and could face up to 20 years in a penal colony.
You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. Our team of journalists, researchers, and analysts is funded by readers, listeners, and viewers just like you. To support independent journalism, please consider becoming a patron. You can find us on patreon.com at Malcontent News.
Here is my theater-wide update. Someone changed the sign, because it's been 0 days since a Russian government official has threatened nuclear war. The Kremlin continues to struggle with its message after the US House of Representatives approved substantial military aid for Ukraine, going to the "don't make us nuke you well again." The foreign minister of Russia, Sergei Lavrov, warned, quote, "We see serious strategic risks in this, leading to an increase in the level of nuclear danger. The Westerners are teetering dangerously on the brink of a direct military clash between nuclear powers, which is fraught with catastrophic consequences." Unquote. The only country in the world that has threatened nuclear war in the last 6 months is Russia. And there is only a minuscule risk of Russia using nuclear weapons, which has existed since the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. Russia has repeatedly used the threat of nuclear war as a deterrent to provide military support for Ukraine and overplayed the threat in 2022. The messaging provides talking points to pro-Russian voices on social media and feeds into the angst held by some national security experts. Find your nuclear bunker Generation X buddy who can explain what it was like living during the Cold War. This was a day that ended in Y roughly through 1986. On April the 24th, Ukrainian men of conscription age can only receive consulate support to receive documents to return to Ukraine. The change is due to the mobilization law that was signed on April the 17th. London has accepted the credentials of former Commander-in-Chief Valery Zaluzhny, who has been named the new Ukrainian ambassador to the United Kingdom. Captain Dmytro Pletenchuk has been named the new Director of Communications for Operational Command South, replacing Natalia Humanyuk, who was dismissed last week. A bipartisan group of congresspersons, Thomas Kane Jr., Bill Keating, Madeleine Dean, and Nathaniel Moran, arrived in Kyiv for meetings and as a show of support for the Ukrainian government. Speaking at a press conference, Keating told reporters, quote, "You may have noticed that things don't happen very quickly in the US Congress these days, and it's a shame. But the bipartisan spirit that we have here is a sign that we can get the job done." Unquote. President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky talked to his American counterpart Joe Biden by telephone. President Biden promised that he would immediately sign the Supplemental Spending Bill and Repo Act as soon as the Senate approved it, and that the first defense aid package to Ukraine would be, quote, "fast and powerful." Zelensky indicated that the first package would include ATACMS missiles and said that negotiations for security guarantees between the US and Ukraine were ongoing. The US Senate is expected to vote on its version of the Supplemental Spending Package and Repo Act today. London confirmed that it would announce the details of a $617 million military aid package to Ukraine on Tuesday. The latest package will be the largest tranche of aid the UK has provided. The next meeting of the contact group on the defense of Ukraine will be held this Friday. Approximately 50 nations are expected to attend. Politico reported that the US is considering sending additional non-combat military advisors to Ukraine, citing a statement by Department of Defense spokesperson Major General Patrick Ryder. Currently, it is known that there is a contingent of US Marines that are assigned to the American Embassy in Kyiv as a security detail, and auditors with the Department of Defense who are monitoring the use and distribution of military aid currently in Ukraine. The High Representative of the European Union for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Josep Borrell, joined a growing chorus of European military and government leaders stating that 155mm artillery rounds from the Czech-led ammunition coalition will start to arrive in Ukraine by June. Currently, 180,000 rounds are under contract and another 300,000 are funded. The former head of the Polish National Security Bureau, retired Brigadier General Stanislav Kozej, called on Warsaw to shoot down Russian missiles and drones still in Ukrainian airspace if they are on a clear course toward Poland. He called for creating an, quote, air and missile defense zone several tens of kilometers into Ukraine, stating, quote, such a forward zone is simply an element of self-defense in accordance with international law. It is the protection of its borders from incidents. The Prime Minister of Poland, Donald Tusk, said that while his nation does not have any Patriot air defense systems it can spare, Ukrainian airspace could be defended, quote, in other ways and with other types of weapons. There has been rampant speculation that Kyiv and Warsaw are in active talks about establishing a joint air and missile defense zone. Polish President Andrzej Duda told FACT that he has been leading negotiations with the US to forward deploy nuclear weapons in his country. He cited Russia's increasing aggression and militarization of Kaliningrad, referring to it by the historical name of Königsberg, and the forward deployment of Russian tactical nuclear weapons in Belarus. Quote, we are an ally of the North Atlantic Alliance, and we have obligations in this area as well, so we are simply pursuing a joint policy. The Foreign Minister of Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, said that Ukraine was in talks to receive four more Patriot batteries between the relevant countries and the US. Greek officials said their nation was willing to provide one or two Patriot systems to Ukraine under the condition that the US would provide a security guarantee to backfill the inventory if there were an act of aggression by Turkey. In breaking news at the time of recording, several Greek news agencies were reporting that Washington and Athens had ironed out the details of an agreement. The Greek Patriots would include PAC-2 interceptors. The Minister of Defense of Sweden, Poul Jonsson, said that his country was considering sending a Patriot battery to Ukraine, but did not provide any additional details. Independent of a decision on the Patriot, Sweden will transfer their air defense systems to Ukraine, possibly including their RBS-70-man portable air defense system. Latvia also announced that it would provide Ukraine with short-range air defense systems, as the vote in the House of Representatives to restart aid to Ukraine appears to have opened the floodgates of new aid from other countries. German newspaper Bild reported defense manufacturer FFG, who was contracted to provide 400 mine-resistant ambush protection vehicles in 2024 as part of a $336 million contract, will only deliver 100. The contract has been plagued with problems, including claims that Ukraine was overcharged and the specified vehicles lack adequate protection for use in frontline areas. FFG claims the delays are due to licensing issues in the US and meeting mine resistance requirements. It's time to take a trip to the land of Mobik's Mobilization and Mir. In occupied Donetsk, Volodymyr Frolov, a music teacher who was forcibly mobilized in February 2022 despite being disabled, was killed in combat on April 15th near Krasnohorivka. Frolov was forcibly removed from the school he taught at and has tried to get out of the Russian 5th Separate Motorized Rifle Brigade. He reportedly got orders to be transferred to Rostov-on-Don for a medical examination, but his commander sent him on the failed assault. The last missing crew member of the Tu-22M3 strategic bomber shot down on April the 18th was found dead in a swampy area on the 21st. Another crew member was killed, reportedly the command pilot, and two others were wounded and remain in the hospital. Russian propagandist with Russian state media agency Izvestia, Semyon Yeryomin, was killed by a first-person view one-way drone while on the forwardmost line of friendly troops. Pro-Russian propagandist and blogger Mikhail Kasperov from Canada was killed in a high-speed single-vehicle motorcycle accident in occupied Sevastopol. Kasperov, better known as Misha from Canada, left the EU in December and traveled to occupied Ukraine. The next segment will discuss gender-based violence. If you are sensitive to the topic of sexual assault, you can stop listening to today's podcast here. More information about the death of Russian propagandist and illegal combatant Russell Bentley has come to light. On April the 8th, Bentley reportedly was taking pictures after a Ukrainian artillery strike hit positions of the 5th Separate Motorized Rifle Brigade in occupied Horlivka. Agitated Russian troops picked up on his Texas accent and took him into custody. Bentley was reportedly accused of being a spy, beaten, tortured, and sexually assaulted. While in custody, it is claimed that soldiers realized they had made a mistake and killed Bentley to cover up the incident. There is no indication that an investigation into his murder has started. Russian military Milblogo 13th was having another social media meltdown after learning one of his friends, Pasha, was killed in combat. Quote, "For those whom you sent into battle in a T-62 tank with a non-functional gun, while you were having fun in a Hyundai Elantra. For how you sent our Pasha to death, how you killed a tanker in the assaults, I know everything about you now. Realizing that the guys would die, you did it consciously. You did this on purpose. You are the enemy." Unquote. They're always so close to figuring it out. 13th continued. "Andrei Nikolaevich Kovalev from 255th, you are not a major, you're a damn leaky one. I'm telling you this so that you understand, in torment." He was just warming up, posting several more times before declaring that he wouldn't go into battle with these types of commanders. Exactly. Go home. You have it figured out. Don't drink vodka, don't collect 100,000 rubles, go home. Follow your own advice when you wrote, quote, "And those who want to engage in moralizing, wait. That in the place of my friend Pasha, there will be your friend, husband, brother, and father. Then you will understand." Unquote. Finally, Russia may be buying back air defense equipment it sold to other countries. A propaganda piece recorded in Ukraine from the Russian Ministry of Defense showed a Panzer I air defense system that had been modified for Iraq. The last system in that configuration shipped to the Middle East nation in 2016. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.